Hi, my name's Pete Banton, and I'm the co-founder of the Awaken Life Project here in Portugal. And I'd like to welcome you to this new podcast, which is named after my recently released first book called The Fire of the Heart. In this podcast, I'm going to be exploring the nature of an authentic spiritual awakening and its potential implications in these tipping point times we are living through together. I hope that you will find these podcasts illuminating and provocative, and most of all, I hope that they'll ignite a big and potentially all-consuming fire in your heart. Hi everyone, can you feel it? There's something happening that is very different about the world right now. Do you sense a deep shift occurring, but perhaps struggle to put it into words? Isn't it true that old maps and ways of navigating life no longer seem quite up to the job? So many competing and incompatible narratives about COVID-19 and the whole nature of society are in vigorous competition these days. Censorship is rampant across big tech. People are deserting Google, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter in droves. People are also profoundly mistrusting the central banking system and fiat currency. And Bitcoin is soaring as a result. People are demonstrating on the streets in many countries around the world against the COVID-19 lockdowns. Do you sense a kind of tipping point time in your experience of our current historical moment? Are we collectively breaking through and entering an exciting new phase of the Great Awakening, as some alternative pundits say? Is the future so bright that you got to wear shades? Or are we breaking down under the weight of endemic confusion and polarization in what some folks call a hopelessly fragmented post-truth world? Is the future in fact so dire that we would be better off minimizing or even eventually eradicating our human presence here? On the third stone from the sun. I haven't done a podcast for a while, but I felt the impetus to get the ball rolling again when I listened to a podcast last week which featured two friends and former spiritual brothers of mine, Carter Phipps and Craig Hamilton. If you're interested in listening to that podcast, you can find it on Carter's website at carterphipps.com. That's Carter, PHIPPS.com. I know both of them very well, as we spent many years together in a progressive spiritual community. And although we have hardly seen or been in contact with each other for many years, those bonds forged in the fire of authentic spiritual communion and transformation run very deep. I was interested to listen to this podcast because it was entitled Countercultures, Conspiracies, and Everything in Between, which I thought was a great title. And it was particularly focused on the theme of conspirituality, a term that has been recently coined and propagated to label the rising tide of people in the wellness and contemporary spirituality movements who are apparently believing in and spreading dangerous conspiracy theories, especially since the advent of the COVID-19 pandemic. So why was I so interested? Well, as some of you may know, I've been derided by many people in apparently progressive spiritual circles for being a conspiracy theorist myself. And recently, some have seen fit to brand me further
as a conspirituality theorist. Because not only am I a conspiracy theorist, but I'm a spiritual teacher to boot. And oh, what a very dangerous combination that is, they say. The other reason has to do with the fact that my becoming what is popularly known as a conspiracy theorist had everything to do with something that happened when I was living in that spiritual community with Craig and Carter and many others. So to begin, I would like to tell a bit of that story, as I think it'd be helpful in understanding how I've come to be a rather controversial figure in this whole arena. To begin with, I feel it's significant to say that I did not have a political bone in my being until 9/11, by which time I was 36 years old. My primary passion in life was, and still is, penetrating into the mystery of existence and the limitless potential for spiritual awakening. I never really cared very much about the world, per se, which just seemed to be going to hell, as far as I could tell. And I was so positively disillusioned by all that the world had to offer by age 27 that I almost became a Buddhist monk. Also, unlike most other people I was associated with, especially in the political community, I did not particularly identify as left-wing or right-wing. I obviously cared about basic goodness and ecology and civil rights, etc., like any sensitive individual does. But I always had an instinctive distrust of all politicians and the overarching system of governance. And no doubt my the rebellious streak in my nature has a lot to do with that, and also how my journey has unfolded. I will never forget the day when many of us at the ashram, where we lived in Western Massachusetts, watched the Twin Towers coming down live on TV. Amidst the shock that rippled through the room, I also wondered, how could this possibly be happening? I mean, wasn't the eastern seaboard of the United States one of the most protected airspaces in the world, for a start? Not being of a particularly political bent at the time, I didn't bother to pursue that question any further. But that seed of doubt was sparked again a couple of years later when I got into a conversation with a volunteer at the ashram about 9/11, in which he told me that he was convinced that 9/11 was a false flag and an inside job to justify the war on terror as a pretext for invading Iraq and thereby securing its oil supplies, and domestically to enforce the Patriot Act, which was a brazen move to take away civil liberties in the name of public safety. Now, doesn't that sound a bit similar to what is going on with the draconian lockdown measures right now around COVID-19? Is it really about public health, or is it more about centralized control? This fellow gave me a book to read at the time on the subject called Crossing the Rubicon, 9/11 and the Age of Oil, by a man called Mike Rupert, who was actually a hard-nosed LA police officer who became an independent journalist. It was a huge brick of a book, about 1,000 pages, written in the mode of a court case, and it was filled with meticulous evidence. And as I read it at night before going to sleep over the course of several weeks, the evidence was so overwhelming, especially in light of what was occurring geopolitically in the wake of 9/11, that I had a shock of awakening to the seemingly irrefutable fact that what we had been told about 9/11 was all a big lie. That shock of recognition that governmental elites would indeed go as far as masterminding a massive false flag attack, killing many US citizens to further a political agenda, and that the entire mainstream media was complicit in the cover-up, on a deeper level did not surprise me at all, for it was merely a confirmation of the endemic corruption of the entire system that I had intuited for my entire adult life. However, that shock or cognitive dissonance, as it is often called, deepened much more when I began to speak with some of my spiritual brothers and sisters about what I had read. Here we all were, part of a radical, progressive spiritual experiment, boldly committed to the observation, understanding, and transcendence of our psychologically and culturally conditioned egos, and oftentimes going through tremendous individual and collective spiritual crises. And yet, to my astonishment, nobody was even interested in reading the book. Despite the fact that we were all committed to questioning the reportage of our own minds, and that free and unbridled inquiry was a defining feature of our lives together, nobody was remotely open to questioning the reportage of the government and the mainstream media. At least it seemed to me. In fact, I was told that I was being negative, or that I was crazy to be reading such obvious garbage. But when I retorted that the book was full of facts and evidence-based conclusions, I was met with glazed-over expressions of disinterest, and sometimes even contempt. In fact, even my spiritual teacher, who emboldened us to question everything and founded the magazine What is Enlightenment? To ask the big questions and challenge the sacred cows in the contemporary spiritual arena, had no interest and called me a left-wing radical, which is very ironic because these days I get accused of being a right-wing radical by many apparently progressive folks who would rather resort to ad hominem attacks than look at any of the evidence I might present. And I shall never forget the day when I went to my dear spiritual brother Craig Hamilton, the then editor of the What is Enlightenment magazine, with the book in my hand, and encouraged him to at least give some of it a read. I remember him smiling broadly, glazing over, but looking me in the eye and firmly saying, "I don't want to know." Well, at least I appreciated the fact that Craig was being honest. However, as I listened to Craig and Carter on their recent podcast, confidently ridiculing the so-called conspiracy theories about 9/11, the dangers of 5G and COVID-19 vaccinations, and discussing the dangerous onset of this conspirituality phenomenon in their midst, I couldn't help thinking that if Craig had had the courage to read that book, then maybe he wouldn't be quite so sure of himself now. So this podcast, which I'm calling Conspirituality Theorist or Conspirituality Factualist, which will probably develop into a few, as I have a lot to say on the subject, is a response to my friends, Carter and Craig, and to many others I personally know out there who might regard me as misguided at best or a deranged at worst conspirituality theorist. And of course, it is addressed to any others in the apparently progressive and even integral spiritual scene that are disturbed by the phenomenon of more and more of their supposedly intelligent and discerning friends succumbing to obviously bogus conspiracy theories. In this first podcast, I don't want to get too much into specifics of what may or may not be conspiracy theory or conspiracy fact. But suffice to say that my own conclusions about what is really going on in our crazy human-created world today are the results of over 16 years of ongoing research since that fateful day when I went down the rabbit hole on reading the very appropriately named book, Crossing the Rubicon. And I'll be forever grateful to dear Mike Rupert, who has since sadly committed suicide after being hounded and threatened for years by those he was so heroically committed to exposing. As the saying from Alice in Wonderland goes, once you go down the rabbit hole, you can never come back. And I can testify to that being true in my own experience, as I know it is true in the experience of more and more people these days. And once I was convinced that 9/11 was indeed an inside job and a false flag, my journey down the rabbit hole was propelled by simply asking the question, why? Or, qui bono? Who benefits? And I could never have imagined where that question has taken me as I was led from one line of research to the next. Some of you may know the famous poem by Robert Frost, which says, "I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged into a wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference." That very much resonates with my experience, actually, of my entire life, but particularly in this whole arena. But that difference made by travelling the road less travelled has also come with a price. Some of my friends, including many with whom I had forged deep spiritual brother and sisterhood in the bright transcendent ground of prior unity, have chosen to attack or unfriend me for sharing my contrarian views and research, primarily on Facebook. However, over time, my passion for truth and questioning everything has brought many new associations and friendships my way, with others who are also taking the road less travelled by. And after years of research, I could not agree more with Mark Twain, who famously said that truth is stranger than fiction. And in the course of this journey, I have to say that I've discovered that so many of the sensitive and intelligent souls who presume that they are interested in truth, who presume that they're open-minded and capable of taking multiple perspectives, are in fact, when push comes to shove, far more interested in protecting their unexamined presumptions and worldviews than they have any idea of. So I'm offering this podcast not to try to convince anyone of anything in particular, but primarily to address the unexamined presumptions and biases that underpin the framework in which this phenomenon is being looked at and discussed, especially by cultural and spiritual progressives. So I want to offer this in the spirit of a challenge and an invitation. My challenge to you is this. If you believe that everything that the mainstream media tells you is a conspiracy theory, is indeed only ever theory, and has nothing whatsoever to do with fact or possible fact, and especially if you tend to react to those who disseminate such theories by launching ad hominem attacks on their character, instead of being genuinely interested in the content and basis of their argument, then I say that you should be more honest, as Craig was with me back in 2004, when he said, "I don't want to know." Why do I say this? Because if you did sincerely want to know the truth about this matter, it really doesn't take much research to discover that the media and government, and by the way, the word government, governmente, means mind control, that the media and government are far from being trustworthy sources of truth. So that's my challenge and my invitation to all those that are concerned and interested in this whole phenomenon is to be receptive to two facts. And yes, these are facts and not theories that define the framing of this whole phenomenon. The first fact is that the term conspiracy theory was invented by the CIA in the wake of the assassination of JFK in 1963. Why? To take the shocked populace of America off the scent of any evidence-based research that challenged the official narrative. This is a fact because in 1976, the New York Times obtained a document they requested via the Freedom of Information Act. This document was a CIA dispatch labelled PSYCH for Psychological Operations that was distributed in 1967, indicating that they coined the phrase conspiracy theory and conspiracy theorists to attack anyone who challenged the official narrative from the Warren Commission. It also has a CS indicated on it, which stands for Clandestine Services Unit. And you can see this document on the internet. You can find it. It is from that point on that the term conspiracy theory and conspiracy theorist have been shoved down our throats. These terms have been weaponized, just as so many other labels have been used to distract, manipulate, and change the narrative to suit the agenda of the powers that be. The bottom line is there are hundreds, if not thousands, of conspiracies taking place all around us, legitimate ones, while the powers that be are busy misdirecting us with their conspiracy theorist labels. Evidence is being dug up, they are being exposed, and what they claim to be theory is, more often than not, truth. The second fact has to do with CIA Project Mockingbird. Project Mockingbird effectively weaponized the US mass media against its own population, using agents who were covertly under control of the CIA to infiltrate the media companies. Operation Mockingbird, which I have no doubt is still ongoing, was and is the covert infiltration of all mass media from political left to right. And that media is now consolidated and controlled by six massive corporations, all owned by the same 0.01%. The CIA director, William Casey, who led Operation Mockingbird, said the following: "We'll know our disinformation campaign is complete when everything that the American people believe is false. This is fact, not theory. And by the way, if you want to do this kind of research for yourself, don't use Google. Use the search engine DuckDuckGo. Why? Because Google is as controlled by the same 0.01% as the New York Times, the BBC, you know, the entire spectrum of mass media from left to right. Actually, you'll be amazed if you do some searches on DuckDuckGo and also on Google and see how different it is, the information that comes up. And so, going back to JFK, I want to quote something that he said in a speech just prior to his assassination. This is what he said: "We are opposed around the world by a ruthless and monolithic conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system that has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed." Now, I just want to point out that JFK used the dreaded C word, conspiracy. And if JFK was alive today, not only would he be cancelled by the woke liberal progressives, he would be demonized by the mainstream media, deplatformed and censored by social media. And no doubt he would be impeached by Congress. But I guess they were just a lot more efficient back then. They just assassinated him. Now, I believe that it was in response to him using the word conspiracy that his killers, the CIA, and by the way, Bush Sr. was one of the primary masterminds of JFK's assassination. I believe that it was they who invented the term conspiracy theorists to ensure the marginalization and public ridicule of anyone who would have challenged the official narrative. And that very ingenious strategy is still very much in effect today. But at last, It's now falling apart. More and more people just aren't buying it anymore. And that's because of COVID-19. And my own view about COVID-19, whatever it actually is that it's both a blessing and a curse. Why? Because amidst all the horrendous suffering, economic collapse, and draconian lockdowns, because of the lockdowns, people have had time to actually do their own research and to consider all the warring perspectives, to see the rampant censorship. Censorship of doctors, of virologists, of lawyers, and to observe the so many dots that simply don't add up. Different messages coming from Fauci, the World Health Organization, you know, different professionals speaking out. All of this has led more and more people, as well as some spiritual progressives, to question what the heck is going on in a way that they never did before. And I think that's very, very, very positive. And as a result, the powers that be and their mockingbird media are losing control of the narrative. So what I am saying is that there is essentially no truly independent mass media in the United States, and nor in most of the world at present. I believe this is a fact. The corporate media is in the business of power and control over you. It is not in the business of holding power to account. They achieve this by defining, in an Orwellian sense, what the very nature of truth is. To them, truth is whatever authority tells you it is. Anyone who rejects their authority to define reality and asserts their sovereign right to think for themselves is ridiculed and ostracized as a conspiracy theorist. And this control of the media is not just a modern phenomenon, it goes way back. Consider this quote from John Swinton, who was the former chief of staff of the New York Times, when he said this to a gathering of journalists in 1880. And I quote, "There is no such thing at this date of the world's history in America as an independent press. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, within 24 hours my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and the vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks, and they pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. To question the veracity of the mass media in the present is not some radical proposition, it is basic common sense, grounded in overwhelming historical evidence. These failed media institutions are primarily agents of lawless power, not individual liberty." So John Swinton, he said that after he'd stepped down from being chief of staff of the New York Times in 1880. Now, you know, of course, most liberal progressives especially, you know, they're aware to some degree that, you know, media is controlled by elite interests, etc. And, you know, even Craig and Carter were saying on their podcast, well, yeah, we have to be open-minded and some conspiracies may be true. And, you know, we know that Monsanto's done some nasty things and, you know, they lied to us about Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. But, you know, people just tend to keep it kind of vague. I mean, if we do know that the mainstream media and big corporations have lied to us about very important things that have to do with our well-being and health, Well, how do we know that we were told the truth about 9/11? What about the war on terror? Are we being told the truth about human-caused climate change? And what about COVID-19? Should we all just diligently wear our mask? Or maybe two or three of them by now? And just get vaccinated as soon as possible, as Craig was suggesting we should do at the end of the podcast? Or could there be a more nefarious agenda at play here that has more to do with extending the reach of technocratic centralized control over our lives than it does with securing public health? Why don't we hear anything from the mass media about boosting our immune system, for example? Why is nobody apparently dying from influenza since the pandemic? Why are so many of the people who are being what's being put on the death certificate as they died of COVID, when it's being proven that they died of all kinds of other morbid conditions? I'm reminded of a story I came across of a guy who died in a motorcycle accident in Florida, and he was put down as dying of COVID-19. Anyway, I digress. Why all the rampant censorship? And it's not just of tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists, people talking about, more far out things like aliens and flat earth. But these are doctors, lawyers, virologists, and other professionals who are challenging the mainstream of narrative of COVID-19. Censored. And what is this great reset and new normal that is all of a sudden being touted from on high as the solution to all our societal ills and the only way forward from the dreaded scourge of COVID-19. So my point is that without understanding the enormous capacity for deception by the media, it's very difficult to see any of the possible present time hoaxes very clearly. If you do understand how manipulated the media is, well then, you start to see more of what's there. But most of the time, people only see what they want to see or what others tell them to see, instead of really investigating to see what is really there. I mean, I'll give you an obvious example with this so-called pandemic. How many of you have actually seen someone dying from this pandemic? How many of you have seen homeless people dying on the streets? If it was a real pandemic, wouldn't there be the presence of death, around? Wouldn't it be just obvious to us on some level that this was really serious? See, that's a good example of people don't see what is actually there. They just see what they're being told by the mainstream media. People always also tend to embrace illusions because they are presented with another illusion, which is that those illusions are embraced by the majority. So what I mean is people are more willing to not question something if it appears that the majority of people are not questioning it. So therefore, it must be true. But the truth is that illusions only become popular and widely accepted because they are pounded into us by the media with such an intensity and high level of repetition that the sheer force of it disguises even the most obvious lies and truths. And like obedient schoolchildren, we just do not question their validity, and we tend to swallow everything up. Why do we do this? I believe it's because since the earliest days of our youth, we have been conditioned to accept that the direction of the herd and the authority anywhere is always right. In my own journey of awakening, it has become clear to me that this fight between false external authority, like the corporate mass media, and what we could call the divine right to decide for ourselves, as we are all self-sovereign individuals, is in essence a spiritual war. It is an endless fight against deception, infiltration, and subversion that demands our obedience. We are always having our spiritual, cultural, and political beliefs manipulated by powerful psychopaths. Our identity is hijacked for their benefit and our increasing enslavement. It is my contention that so many popular spiritual teachers and progressive thought leaders have no idea how mind-controlled they actually are. And so I ask you, could it not be true that most of those progressives who are concerned about the rise of conspirituality infiltrating their ranks actually don't want to know about any evidence-based research that might potentially challenge their entire worldview, even while they pay lip service to the need for open-mindedness and tolerance? Now, I perfectly understand that nobody wants to discover, especially in midlife, that their mind has been sabotaged and their spirit abused. However, to gain a foundation for benevolent change, we must acknowledge whatever is false as being a deception, and instead must identify with whatever we discover to be real and true. Ultimately, this is about a personal awakening journey of growth. We could say from darkness to light. It involves abandoning largely unconscious fear as our core driver in life and embracing conscious joy and unbridled freedom, and particularly freedom of thought. After listening to Craven Carter's podcast on the topic, I was intrigued to listen to some others. So I listened to a podcast with Terry Patton and the founder of the Shift Network, who I believe is called Stephen Dynan. And I also listened to Jeff Saltzman's Daily Evolver podcast on the topic. He's quite a prominent voice in the integral scene. And I also, I'm checking out what is called the Conspirituality podcast. And maybe they're the guys who came up with this label. I don't know. And while they're all very articulate, intelligent, and no doubt deeply caring people, what I sensed underneath all of their nuanced and sophisticated big picture attempts to make sense of this alarming phenomenon was an unacknowledged fear. And I believe it's unacknowledged because if they truly allowed themselves to fully feel that fear, that uncertainty, they would, of course, have to at least make some room for the possibility that there may be more to the big picture of what is truly going on in our world than they are aware of. So why is it that when it comes to conspiracy or conspirituality theory, that there is so much fear? I mean, if people like me are really just crazy, deluded nutcases, well, why bother censoring us? Why take offense? To me, the reason for the fear is actually very obvious, but it only becomes obvious when one sincerely begins to be more interested in the truth than in anything else. Because when one does become that interested in truth, the potential implications of what one might discover are huge, and they will mess with your life and relationships. Conspiracy theory is considered to be so dangerous because one basic truth can be used as a foundation for a mountain of lies. And if one dares to dig down deep enough into the mountain of lies and bring out that truth and set it on top of the mountain of lies, then the entire mountain will collapse under the weight of that one truth. And there is nothing more devastating to a structure of lies than the revelation of the truth upon which the structure of lies was built. because the shock waves of the revelation of the truth reverberate not only in the present, but also backwards and forwards in time. You know, if you would find out, for example, that the news is indeed fake or predominantly fake, well, then the dominoes can rapidly start falling. And if you have an inquisitive mind and a strong passion for truth, or for freeing your mind, as Neo said in The Matrix, it might not be long before you are unearthing fake history and even fake science. And I can tell you, this has been my experience. So there is what I see as an unacknowledged, vague, non-specific fear these days amongst many in the priestly caste of the liberal, progressive, educated class. And I would also like to address what I feel keeps that fear well hidden. And that is their already knowing arrogance. And this is usually also unconscious. Their arrogance is their presumption that their intellectual capability and credentials protect them from being deceived. But unfortunately, this is the exact opposite of reality. It's been my observation that liberal progressives in particular love to absorb the largest amount of second-hand, unverifiable information. They feel a compelling need to have an opinion on every important question of our time, and thus they easily succumb to opinions offered to them by media propaganda, while at the same time considering themselves capable of judging for themselves. I see this pattern repeated over and over amongst educated and intelligent liberal spiritual progressives. It's in the way that they feel that they are too clever to be deceived by emotional manipulation. However, I feel in reality that they are largely mistaking intellectual intelligence for intuitive intelligence. And they are absolutely not the same thing. Some things really are so stupid that only an intellectual would believe them. Then there is the common liberal progressive shadow that laments the collapse into tribalism and the fragmentation of any common ground in a post-truth world. While they identify themselves as the big picture bridge builders and give lip service to the importance of multiple perspective taking and engaging in a creative friction of dynamic dialogue, I find that many of them are the ones who are contributing to the polarizing toxicity of the political climate that they complain about, by insisting that I and others they disagree with do not have any right to share our views. This is why liberal progressives don't have any issue really with the current rampant censorship that is occurring, especially since the advent of the pandemic. Oops, the pandemic. What this amounts to me, is a kind of woke progressive fascism, which is a very big shadow on the liberal left, so-called progressive scene. I also think that the boomer generation, especially in America, what they don't get is that the left is now the epicenter of the elite and no longer the counterculture that it was in their youth. And so now it is those on the right who are ironically standing up for free speech. For example, or just to give some more examples, some personal examples of how this has played out in my life. Some friends of mine, some of whom are now unfriends by their own choice, have seen fit to accuse me of being a climate change denier because I question the mainstream narrative that the reality of climate change is primarily human-caused. And I question that narrative with empirical evidence. I've also been labelled a Holocaust denier because I question the narrative of the 6 million Jews who died in the Nazi period, and also that I question the whole story we've been told of the gas chambers, the genocide conducted through the gas chambers. And there's a lot of empirical and largely censored evidence that challenges this. I mean, there have been scientists, investigators, who've gone to Auschwitz, for example, and they have found no evidence, no forensic evidence of gas chambers. And these people have been, censured, exiled, even imprisoned for bringing that evidence forward. Now, in both those cases, I don't doubt that climate change is real. I think that's pretty obvious to anyone who would observe the weather. And I don't deny, of course, that Hitler initiated a horrendous persecution of the Jews. But I question the narratives and the unseen agenda behind these narratives with empirical evidence. I've also been charged with being an anti-Semite because I'm very critical of Israel and the overtly Zionist control of American media and politics. And then, of course, to trump it all, I'm often attacked or labeled as being a right-wing, fascist, white supremacist, because I support Donald Trump. And, while I always say to these people, I don't regard him as a savior, or, it's not like I resonate with everything about all his policies and his character, but I do support his challenge to the ubiquitous forces of technocratic globalism. And basically him standing up for the Constitution. And I believe that battle's far from over, by the way. But the deeper reason that I support Trump is his profound commitment to ending massive industrial-scale global child sex trafficking, and worse. And through his influence, there have been so many trafficking networks and individuals and, people enslaving children in horrendous ways who've been rounded up and captured and imprisoned. But none of this gets covered by the media. Why? Because they are complicit in keeping it covered up. In other words, the people at the top, the people who control the media, are involved in this industry, in this horror. So to all those oh-so-tolerant liberal progressives who love to denigrate anyone who offends their unexamined beliefs, I say that questioning and doubting the most historically corrupt and fraudulent or a denier of anything, nor does it make you a conspiracy theorist. Actually, questioning is and should be, I think it obviously is, the place of reason. And, the true values of liberalism, the true liberal values came out of the Age of Reason, the European Enlightenment period. So the fact that questioning has become so taboo should, in fact, send a chill up every liberal progressive spine, I think. These days, to so many liberal progressives, oppression is hearing a word that offends you. This whole matter of being triggered, But I say oppression isn't hearing a word that offends you. Oppression is being told that you can't say certain words because you'll offend someone else. And as Orwell so presciently wrote, if liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. So I've covered quite a bit there, more than I expected. So I think I'll leave it here for this podcast. but I will follow up with another, because one of the other things I want to address is a subject that I feel has been, kind of flatlined out of the liberal progressive sensibility, and also the spiritual sensibility of many sophisticated Westerners who have imbibed Eastern non-dual teachings. And that is the whole question and phenomenon of evil. And why do I feel this is so important? Because my research has shown me that it is evil that uses the authority principle to condition us to obey without questioning. And without questioning what, why, or whom we are obeying. And I have no doubt that the modus operandi of evil is to destroy your and our identity so that they, the transnational elites, can gain power over you and us. So that's the subject I'll dive into in my next podcast. So I hope you've all found this provocative, compelling. If it's triggered you, I think that's good. And just to say again, I'm offering this in the spirit of both a challenge and an invitation. I'm very open to any respectful friction and dialogue about this. If any of you would like to write an email or ask me to cover a specific theme or aspect related to this topic, you can send me an email at pete.bampton@gmail.com. pete.bampton@gmail.com. All right. All the best, and keep on keeping on. And who knows, maybe the future is so bright that we gotta wear shades.
So thank you very much for listening. That's it for today. If you would like to find out more about my book, The Fire of the Heart, you can go to thefireoftheheart.com, where you can also download 4 free chapters. If you'd like to find out more about the Awaken Life Project, then go to awakenlifeproject.org or our Awaken Life Project Facebook page, where you can find out all about our ashram, extended spiritual community, retreats and other events, and our adventures living off-grid in the mountains of Portugal. So keep on keeping on until next time, and as they say in Portugal, até já.